The Guardian.
Gastarbeiter. Welcome to Music Weekly from Guardian.co.uk. I am Paul McInnes, and in the merest blinking of an eye, we will be bringing you this.
I only knew the name of the stage, and I couldn't remember from last year which one it was. And when I found out that it was that stage, I kind of, like, my heart lifted a little.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of, like, got more of a, like, a woodland party feel to it.
That is the sound of Joe from Metronomy at the Latitude Festival, Britain's most bijou musical gathering. We sent OMM's Jamie Hodgson to give us the lowdown. We've got Michael Skronky Han in for Singles Club, where we'll have new music from Cool Kids, Late of the Pier and Jeremy Wormsley. We'll have some new Facebook friends and some blog-based musings. But first, Mr. Nazir Jones. Can't leave it, the game needs him, plus the people need someone to believe in. Someone God, someone trust, cause they know I'ma give them what they want. They're looking for a hero. I guess that makes me a hero. That was Hero by Nas from his controversial new album, N. Cool, a controversial album from a rapper. Who would have thunk it, eh? What, Rosie Swash, who joins me here today.
Hello.
Hello.
Or should I say hola?
Hola, yeah, because I've been away in Spain. That would be appropriate, wouldn't it? Now, I recall about 18 months ago, Nas releasing an album, a controversial album, entitled Hip Hop Is Dead. He's not just trying to use shock tactics, is he, by any chance, in order to shift a few units with his new N, standing for another word, album?
Well, I think he was trying to get people to talk about it, which is another way to get people to be interested in buying it. But when it came down to it at the 11th hour, he changed the title, or as he says in the interview, simply removed it from the packaging because Walmart wouldn't sell it. And so quite possibly that's because he knew that all along, and he thought, well, as long as I get people talking about it, the message is still there, and essentially it's still called the same thing. He just doesn't have it on the artwork.
Sure I entirely buy that, but you addressed this issue with him, I presume.
I did, and so obviously there's a bit of fruity language in the interview, and I do use the N-word, drop the N-bomb.
You drop the N-bomb?
I do to him.
Chris Rock says white people can only do it at 3:45 in the morning on Christmas Eve when they get mugged on the way to Toys R Us.
That's weird, because that's when we phoned him. So really, apart from the fact that everyone's been talking about the album and the title of the album, I wanted to know what the message was behind it.
The message is me. It's who I am, where I am, where I've been, and the unfortunate ignorance, brutality, and injustice that's still happening all over the world, specifically America.
Despite that, I have to say, I think it's a very positive album. Would you agree with that?
I mean, I'm not mad at that.
How do you feel if I'm talking to you about the album's original name and I use the word nigger to say it, even though the context isn't offensive? Does it still affect you in a horrible way?
It can't affect me in a horrible way. Well, some people are different, but if we're talking about it in that context, of course not. Not for me, no way.
I wondered whether part of the reason that you chose the original title was because I've seen you on the red carpet, you know, and you've got a t-shirt on and it says the word nigger in huge letters, and then you've got this primetime TV interviewer talking to you about it, but she won't say the word. Is that part of the reason that you wanted to bring that word back into dialogue?
Absolutely, because in this day and age, we should be over the black and white thing. You know, it's just a shame that so many people are not over it and they don't know how to deal with it or address it. I can't afford a new arrest on my folder. Nigga, breathe. In America, you'll never be free. Middle fingers up, fuck the police. Damn, can a nigga just breathe? It's a sickness that, like, all of us need to get over. And I was told that these award shows wanted to stop nominating albums that had that word in it, and that's basically every rap album. And I agree, the word is an ugly word, but you can't just, you know, stop nominating albums overnight just because that word's in it. And you can't stop racism by acting like it doesn't exist. So I put it in the face of my peers in music. I didn't change the title. The word nigga is just not printed on my album. And if you look at the album cover, the art on the album cover, it kind of speaks louder than just put in the word nigga anyway.
Hey yo, Queens get the money, niggas still screaming, paper chasing. But presidential candidates is planning wars with other nations over steak with Masons. Pregnant teens get birth to intelligent gangsters, they daddy's faceless. Play this, buy your stomach, let my words massage it and rub it. I'll be his daddy if there's nobody there to love it.
You said in an interview recently something that I wasn't sure what you meant. When obviously you get asked about Barack Obama quite a lot, and you said that you would vote for whoever abolished black people not being able to vote after 23 years. And what did you mean by that?
Well, whoever's a humanitarian, like, you don't just have to abolish black people. You just, it's like, there's a whole lot of problems in the world, and I don't expect the president to fix them all overnight, whether it was Hillary, whether it was Obama. You know, I just want a humanitarian, somebody who has love for people everywhere, who has love for their country, period, you know?
Because you said on the your track with Jay-Z, Black Republican, you both show a degree of disdain for Republican values whilst admitting that you aspire to some of those values at the same time. Does that mean that you're neither Democrat nor Republican? You're not affiliated to Barack Obama simply because he's a black man?
No, see, because there's some black devils too. There's like some bad black guys. That doesn't mean because you're black and you're in office, you're going to do the right thing. You know what I'm saying? Barack Obama doesn't represent a bad guy. When you see him, you see brilliance.
I just mentioned Jay-Z there, who you did a track with. There was a degree of controversy over here about him headlining Glastonbury Festival. Do you think that that's an unrealistic approach to hip-hop, to say that it's not part of the mainstream when it actually is?
Yes and no. That's a hard one, you know what I mean? I love all music, and I wish all people could look at it like that and not separate them all the time. But at the same time, you know, rock fans give rock fans what they want. They want rock, you know? But at the same time, a good artist can be accepted on any audience. A great artist who really pays attention to people and what they want can figure it out and entertain any crowd. I'm both sides with that, you know?
If hip-hop should die before I wake, I put an extended clip and body them all day. Roll at every station, wreck the DJ. Roll at every station, wreck the DJ. If hip-hop should die before I wake, I load an extended clip and body them all day. Roll at every station, wreck the DJ. Roll at every station, wreck the DJ.
What do you think about Ice-T made some comment about Soulja Boy and how that wasn't real hip-hop, and is the more club-based rap music that Soulja Boy, is that still hip-hop, or do you agree with Ice-T's sentiment?
No, I mean, Ice-T has his opinion. Ice-T, you know, he's the OG. You know, the guy's been around before all of us. But I think Soulja Boy also has a lot to offer. I think he's good.
This is probably a bit of a random question, but what do you think that you'd be doing if you hadn't started making music when you did?
I don't know. Probably a lot of writing, hustling, like different things, you know, movie shit, who knows?
Is it important for you that this album is commercially successful?
No, it's important to me that it's peer group successful, people successful, you know, just so that it gets to people who it should get to, that, you know, whoever that is, whether that's the Prime Minister of Canada, Mugabe, or Mo from the project. Whoever it gets to is all good.
And so what about when it gets to people like Bill O'Reilly and they attack you, very specifically people like you and Snoop, for, amongst other things, encouraging violence and gun culture? Is that at the point where you don't enjoy the attention, or you enjoy being able to respond to people?
Well, the way the world encourages gun culture and violence, hip-hop music is just, it's a mantra. American culture, world culture has been built on wars, violence, and guns. So us rapping about it is a small thing, and they just don't understand that people like Bill O'Reilly like to separate us and downplay us and even blame us for stuff that both of our forefathers were responsible for, and that was building America. So violence is world culture, period.
That was Nas, and the N album is out now. And I must apologise for the hurried manner of my question asking there, but we didn't have a lot of time. And in those kind of phoners, PR person interjects at any second.
Do you know what? If I had an album, I'd call it Coppernob. I would be about the kind of oppressed ginger masses, and we put it out there, and then I would remove it and just call it C. People might interpret it as meaning something else, and maybe I shouldn't do that. Anyway, Singles Club, Michael Han.
Hello.
Listen, I've got a bit for you. Anyway, Singles Club, Michael Han. The two go together like fritters and spam. So, it's my great pleasure to welcome the editor of Film and Music back to the pod. Hello, Michael.
Ah, oh, hello, Paul, but where are the spam fritters?
Where are the spam fritters?
I want that. Spam fritters. You promised me spam fritters.
Well, we have decided that if things are so hot in the office today, we could actually cook a fry-up on our monitors, but we haven't actually got around to doing that yet. Anyway, are you well?
I'm very well, thank you, Paul. Good. Did you enjoy your holiday?
I had a lovely holiday. Yes, I did. It was very cultural, actually. Let's start the reviewing. Late in the Pier, Heartbeat. That's Heartbeat by Lady of the Pier. Lady of the Pier are from Castle Donington, where they used to hold Monsters of Rock. Not Lady of the Pier, but the town. So it could be that this electro-rock four-piece may have been conceived by Bruce Dickinson on a Randy Rampage. Though it seems unlikely. The band, whose debut album is out in August, have a big following for their glam and flamboyant live show. All of which makes me wonder whether Roy Wood ever played Monsters of Rock. Rosie, do you like Lady of the Pier?
I did until they shamed me in an interview.
Yeah.
Remember that? No. Yeah. You know, I can obviously put that to one side when it comes.
So, yeah, you're so not one for holding grievances.
I think that Sam Eastgate, the lead singer, is really interesting. He's got a side project called L.A. Priest or La Priest. I'm not actually sure whether it's La Priest or L.A. Priest. It's just a vocalist dance thing. But as a person, when I've read interviews with him and having actually interviewed him, I find the rest of them are just kind of hanging on, and I think he'll outgrow them, and I don't think that they're going to do particularly well and that he'll go on and do something interesting.
What do you think of the sound they're making right now? Is that interesting to you?
They got kind of wrapped up in the Claxon's New Wave thing, which is a bit unfair because technically they existed before anyone knew who the Claxon's were. And so you're tempted to say, oh, this is just a fad, and it's a fad that's kind of over, and that if they were going to make it, it would have happened by now. But again, that's kind of unfair to me. I don't think that's ever been what's been behind the reason they make this kind of electronic music, which I think they're quite good at doing. But at the same time, they're the usual thing of hating complacent, mediocre indie, which is not the best reason to start a band, but it's okay. But then also, you know, they just try and be willfully eccentric and present themselves as really arty, and it's really annoying.
Maybe the comparison with the Claxons is a fair one, Michael. I think actually Late the Pier of a good line in Hooks, which is what the Claxons had to a certain extent in Myths of the Near Future.
I think that if they were actually a peer amusement, they would be the Dodgems, which is the finest peer amusement.
Oh,
I think the single is terrific, despite my advanced years.
And
I think the reason for that is that it actually reminds me of my youth. It takes all the sounds of the 1980s, which I've got very, very bored of and have complained publicly about the post-punk revival still continuing. But what they do is take the ones that no one else is using. They're kind of really the sounds you're not allowed to mention. So you've got this kind of ludicrous mid-80s chart pop lush synth sound. You've got the squelchy fat bass. So I realise I actually just mimed squelchy fat bass while
I said that. We all nodded along because we understood what you were doing.
And then it's got that preposterous Monsters of Rock soft metal guitar solo at the end. I think it all comes together really well.
Yeah.
I think the hooks are really good. And because they're not using the same sounds as all those other groups, it actually sounds really, really fresh. And it sounds summery. I think it's a record I could well imagine listening to on my iPod while playing Galaxian on the Pier.
Galaxian. Rosie was having an
anything to it.
Get some old
person. Do I look like a gamer?
The sounds of Castle Donington are there in the song. Do you not acknowledge that one moment, Rosie?
The next one on the album, the track after this on the album, is called White Snake. How fantastic is that? First band I ever saw, White Snake.
I did like them originally. I don't dislike them. I like Bathroom Gurgle and that kind of stuff. And I find them more interesting than, you know...
But this track individually,
Not particularly. God, but, you two are well into late.
And before accusations of bongs and ne'er-do-well behaviour start getting thrown about, we'll pass on. That is Late of the Pier, and it's Heartbeat, and it's out, unfortunately, on August the 3rd, which kind of breaks our rule about reviewing the stuff out this week, but who cares? It's worth it. Hey, it's worth it, man. Right, next track, it's going to be Lose My Cool by Jeremy Wormsley.
Seems like we're always on the move, one step ahead of everything. You are the bearer of my burden, you are the gap in the jeans.
Okay, that is Lose My Cool by Jeremy Wormsley. No relation to Mike Wormsley, who used to work with my mum. Jeremy is the latest NHS spec-wearing brainiac to emerge from the roster of Transgressive Records, home to Young Knives, Foals and The Shins. He is half English, half French, and is described on Wikipedia as sounding like Aphex Twin meets the Beatles, citation needed. He went to Cambridge and hosts a poetry night at the Betsy Trotwood, the pub over the road from The Guardian. Which is probably why we're featuring, because we've got a tenner in the back pocket from the bar staff of the Betsy, Michael.
Don't say that. People believe you. It'll be all over the blogs.
I know. I just love this. I love the fact, one, people get so worked up about it, and then, two, critics get so worked up in response. Michael. Jeremy?
Aphex Twin meets the Beatles.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and then some. Aphex Twin on a particularly dull day, if he hadn't gone the direction he had gone, meets the Beatles if the Beatles hadn't actually had any melodic sense and made some of the best pop records ever. But aside from that, you know, I actually did research on this, and I went and searched out an acoustic version of this song that he played on Italian radio.
See, that's, I tell you, that's the one that comes higher up. There are Google results. It does. You actually have to search for the original.
No, I did my research. So I could compare his songwriting, the pure core of his songwriting, as against the studio treatment. And it was boring in both forms.
There's two different songs here, though, isn't there? I like the verse, don't like the chorus version, but it is unusual.
I feel exactly the same. I find the verse is brilliant. A couple of years ago, I first heard, I think it was like Dirty Blue Jeans, or something. I felt like there was just so much competing to be heard in his songs. The arrangements were all over the place. That he wants to twiddle knobs and play really loud guitar chords and all that. But the seed was planted. I thought there was something about him I liked. In this and the verse, he gets it just right. Everything's quite sparse and no key, and his voice sounds lovely. And then the chorus just sounds like something completely different.
There are 30 million layers of guitars on the chorus.
Yeah, I don't understand it.
It's turning some kind of generic AOR rock song in the chorus. I was a bit harsh, actually, because the verse is more interesting. And at first I did think, oh, a singer-songwriter is doing something more interesting with his instrumentation.
Tom Vecchi or something.
But yeah, the chorus comes in, you just think, let's all go to Asda and buy it from the CD racks there.
That's right. I just wondered whether it's like, okay, now I've got to have something that's a bit more accessible here.
It's peculiar, isn't it? It's a peculiar move.
I like the lyrics in the verse. Mm. I like You Make Me Lose My Cool, My Inhibitions, My Patience. Nice little twist there. You are the captain of the cheese letter. I wonder whether the following line...
I was wondering, because I couldn't believe it. I was trying to search for the lyrics and I couldn't find the lyrics anywhere, because that's what I heard as well. I don't know what a cheese letter is.
Jeremy Wormsley, who we might just be hearing a little bit more from later on in the show, with Lose My Cool. Let's move on to the final track of this week's Singles Club, Cool Kids and 88.
Got my foot looking like an 88 draft pick. It's that sick, it gets sicker than the flu. Enza, you came to pretend I'm the future. A team, you a class on how to be cooler. In fact, I'm the superintendent of the school. And I'm back on my job. I press and twist knobs just to make your head nod. All you whack rappers need to keep your day job. And my work here is done. I'm gonna take the day off.
Do you smoke? Do you watch baseball? Rooftop like I'm bringing 88.
That was 88 by the Cool Kids. The Cool Kids are from Chicago, which is hot right now. as has been observed on this podcast before. This song is about bringing 88 back, a year perceived by some as being the best in hip-hop history. Public Enemy's It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back and N.W.A. Straight Outta Compton were released that year. That's what some people say. Others say it's because 88 is actually the combined age of Cool Kids rappers Mikey Rocks and Chuck English. Rosie.
That would make more sense because I don't think they sound like the hip artists that you just name checked.
No,
they're not of that. The only
album from 88 it sounds like to me is Boogie Down Productions. That really stripped down sparse thing.
Or Tougher Than Leather, which came out that year, Run DMC.
Hey, he's got to prove his hip-hop chops. Like, Paul McGinnis, Mr. Hip-Hop.
Rosie, I want to ask you a particular targeted question on this one, because it seems in this podcast, quite a lot, we come in and we say, well, this band is revisiting this sound and adding this barely discernible tweak to it. I'm wondering whether this is the first ever hip-hop act you can say the same about.
Oh, that's a very complicated question.
It's not. It's simple. It's like, basically, they are refurbishing that 80s, mid-80s sound.
But they're not... What I don't like about them is I don't feel they're adding anything new to it.
Mm.
They've got a song called A Little Bit Cooler, which I really liked because it made fun out of gangster culture and it made fun out of the fact that they wore things that weren't particularly gangster and therefore they were cool. And it seemed to be saying quite a lot. There's no other evidence on that on the rest of their album as far as I can hear, and definitely not on this. It made me think of Biz Markie when I listened to it, which is not a bad thing at all, but with nothing more behind the lyrics, and therefore it's just a pastiche, I feel.
Michael.
I've got slight difficulty here because just before I came up, I was editing Alexis Petridis' review of their album.
Ah.
So I'm going to have to try and find and think, paraphrase what he said.
And pass it off as your own.
Alexis makes a point early on in his review that in their lyrics they say that they are the Black Beastie Boys. And it's true. It's 88 rap. And I agree with Rosie. It's completely unrefurbished. I don't think there's any hint of a twist on there at all.
I think it's all in the production. It's all in the music. The music is amped up and tricked about in a way that you would never been able to do in 88. But that is not necessarily the responsibility of the rappers, but the producers.
I accept that you have great knowledge. But isn't one of the cool kids the one who actually produced it?
I'm not sure which one is which. So I wouldn't like to...
I will bow to your greater knowledge of hip-hop production trends over the past 20 years, because the truth is, Paul, I had to stop listening to hip-hop when Enter the 36 Chambers came out because my wife found it too offensive to play in the house. And since then, in the intervening 13 years... we've had almost no hip-hop in the house, apart from old school, very stripped down, no swearing and no nastiness hip-hop, which we allow.
This
actually resonates with me. It reminds me of the music, again, sadly, I sound so old. It resonates with me because it reminds me of the hip-hop that seemed so exciting when I was a kid. And also, I love the fact that they unashamedly quote The Safety Dance by Men Without Hats, which is one of the great pop records of the 80s, and people always think it's silly and rubbish.
Sound of
you can dance
over
if you
Paul's
want to.
Head.
You can leave your friends behind. I can sing the whole thing if you want.
Yeah, I know that one now. Let's quickly move on. But I think it is worth a small round of applause for the lack of misogyny, violence, etc. Yeah.
Definitely, but you can replace it with content.
Yeah, fair point. 88 by the Cool Kids is out on July 28th. That is our final review for this week. While last week's tunes, they came in for a bit of a kicking on the blog. Shane 07, the Sam Sparrow was dire at best. I wouldn't say I'm a fan, to be honest, though his first single was catchy. I like the Fleet Foxes album, but as one of the other bloggers said, the market is being saturated by this type of generic attempt at folk music. Is it even folk music? Marquee, Sam Sparrow is awful. Tinchy Strider sounds neutered, and the harmonies of Fleet Foxes aren't enough to overcome the fact that they're essentially a band for people that gave up on life 35 years ago. And when Marquee speaks, you have been spoken to. They've been served, the Fleet Foxes. I'm very surprised by that on the blog, Mike, I have to say, because almost everybody I've spoken to, not just Hacks, love the Fleet Foxes. Mm. But they really came for a kicking out.
I've got to say, I only gave up on life 25 years ago, not 35 years ago, so I'd like to excuse myself from that
particular criticism. Have you experienced any form of Fleet Foxes backlash at all?
What, me personally?
Not in the street,
them.
Not people coming on. But, you know,
you ran all that stuff on the Fleet Foxes.
But just sitting in the
rubbish.
Pub and chatting with your mates and blah, blah.
Well, I go to the pub with people who don't actually like music very much. Right. Which gets me away from it. But, you know, I think the Fleet Foxes is great, but obviously the point has to be made that they're not as good as the Hold Steady number 15 in this week's albums charts. How about that?
DL. Can you get? Can you?
No, I was just about to say that's not true because I've been to the pub with you and you talked about the whole thing.
Stop! Both of you, before we get arrested for boosterism, right? Going back to the blog, we hope this week's choices have fared better with you, the listener. If they have, or indeed if they haven't, don't be shy to post your thoughts on the blog at blogs.guardian.co.uk/music. Tell us what you think of Cool Kids, Jeremy Wormsley, and Light of the Pier, and these other tracks, what are out to buy next week. Foo Fighters, Let It Die.
Last time I sent down a message and nailed it to the cross, so I figured I'd just leave you to it. Let you be your own boss.
Down the Sack versus Scroobius Pip, Letter from God to Man.
And the problems you've overthrown, all the beautiful art you've created with such grace and such finesse, but I must admit there are a few things I'm afraid have impressed me less.
I'll only take the breaks off if you do.
Johnny Flynn, Brown Trout Blues.
And roll around like marbles on the floor.
The Saturdays, If This Is Love. That there was the month, or so it were. Michael, top film and music today, by the way. The interesting Todd Rundgren and Hot Chip Chat.
Yes, they come together in one glorious synthesis of geekdom.
Because Todd Rundgren, the one on Shake a Fist with Sounds
He's
of the Studio.
He's the one with, yes, the Sounds of the Studio, man. That's him. And him and Alexis Taylor get into some detail about geekery, and they talk about drugs.
Do they?
I say, ooh. Todd Rundgren is in favour, Alexis Taylor, for himself, is not.
Before you go, I'd like to quickly roll around your skull the subject of this week's Mercury Prize shortlist, which was, you know, the big music talking part of the week. Looking at the shortlist, do you think it's possible to draw some dominant themes? We've got Elbow, Radiohead, British Sea Power, Robert Plant, Alison Krauss, Burial, Estelle, Adele, Laura Marling, Rachel Unthank, Neon Neon, Portico Quartet and Last Shadow Puppets.
No.
Really?
In short, no, I don't think there's ever a dominant theme. I think we always go looking for dominant themes. But really, no, you end up with whatever the judges have managed to agree on by the bizarre process of horse trading and negotiation that sees some albums get let out, other albums put in that maybe we, in our infinite wisdom, and bloggers in their infinite wisdom, and the rest of the world in their infinite wisdom, think shouldn't be in there. I'm not saying Adele, but, you know, that's what everyone's thinking, isn't it? So, no, I don't think there's really a theme. I think the female conspiracy is rubbish. I think one of the interesting things, as Jude Rogers writes in her column in today's Film and Music, the presence of some bands who, you know, you might have thought, well, who's interested in them anymore? Bands on their third, fourth albums, you know, like British Sea Power, Elbow, and Estelle, who's come back after a few years away, suggesting that, in fact, music's obsession with the hot new thing, hey, you can sometimes bypass some gems if you're only obsessed with the new, because sometimes people do need time to grow into their musical skins.
Mm. Rosie, who do you think will win?
I think Burial might win, or quite possibly Laura Marling. I don't think Radiohead should win, because they don't need to. And
do you think that's the point of the Mercury Prize?
Well, but this is the thing. Who knows? You know, I get that it's like the anti-Brits, and it's about critics putting forward their selection of stuff that some people might never have listened to. But who knows what actually, you know, the Claxons were supposedly because they made a forward-thinking album rather than a retro one like Amy Winehouse. I think it's impossible to know. Mm. But Radiohead, I don't think they need it.
I think Elbow with a really good shout. Just seen this outpouring of love for Elbow this over the last few months.
I think it'll be Laura Marling. But Michael, thank you very much for coming in today and joining us on Singles Club.
Always a pleasure, Paul. Love your work.
Thank you very much. And don't forget that you can get Singles Club in a texticular version from Rosie or even Tim Jones nowadays on the site each Monday. New day. Next on Music Weekly, we're off to the international capital of popular music. Yes, Ipswich.
This was a good idea, good idea, good idea.
okay, so it's not quite in Ipswich city centre, and it's actually held in the leafy surrounds of Southwold, but the Latitude Festival is still Suffolk's premier music event. Sorry, the Stowmarket Funk Fiesta. It's also becoming the home of the picnicking classes, but that hasn't stopped the fest from laying on a pretty broad range of music, including a lot of the new acts we like here at Music Weekly. With that in mind, we sent Observer Music Monthly's Jamie Hodgson down to see who he could grab. Amongst those he did grab include the Cock and Bull Kid and Metronomy, which you heard a little bit of earlier. But first of all, he spoke to Jeremy Wormsley, who we heard back in Singles Club. And they had a little chat, and Jeremy, turns out, just arrived on site.
We just arrived, having flown in from Glasgow, where we were playing at King Tut's last night.
How was it going from the rowdiness of Glasgow to the tranquility of Latitude in Suffolk?
It actually wasn't all that rowdy in Glasgow. I hate to, okay, to break the stereotype. It was actually a very well-mannered crowd. Yeah, it was good. And Latitude is just full of people breaking beer balls over each other's heads and stuff. So.
It's just been non-stop carnage since you've got here.
Yeah, I saw someone kill someone else just now. It was horrible.
I've heard it has a very low gun and knife crime rate, Latitude Festival.
I saw someone being very sarcastic earlier.
Really?
If that counts, kind of verbal violence, you know, emotional violence.
Yeah.
Don't know if that counts.
How has the rest of your festival season been? Have you had many others?
I kind of taken it easy this summer, to be honest. My album comes out in October, and I think next summer's going to be quite hectic if everything goes to plan. Up, down, turn around, please don't let me hit
the ground. Man, I think I'm walking on out by myself, so don't... Obviously, your album is slated, it's coming up.
Slated? Has it already been slated?
No, as in for a release date, it's been slated.
Yes.
Yeah. What can we expect from that?
For people who've heard the previous album, I'd say this next one, the songs are better, it sounds better, it's like better recorded technically. It's kind of more coherent, the lyrics are better, I can sing better now than I could then.
And for those people that haven't heard you before, can you give us a little...
Well, the new album is kind of...
Where you're coming from.
Well, I think with this album, something I was really trying to do in all seriousness was... just make something with a lot of heart to it. A lot of kind of strong character, good feelings. There's a lot of stuff that when you listen to it, it actually makes you feel quite good when you listen to it. There's some stuff that just sounds quite unusual, and it's kind of quite difficult to get your head around, but when you do get your head around it, it's really satisfying. And it kind of, everything just runs the gamut between those two extremes, really. Just stuff that's just straightforward and easy, and stuff that's got lots of hidden depths.
I am currently sat next to the man responsible for, without a shadow of doubt, my favourite set at this year's Latitude Festival, Joseph Mount of Metronomy. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. Very well.
How was Latitude Festival for you this year?
It was good. It was kind of a bit stressful because we were at Benicassim the night before.
Yeah.
And had a kind of late night, early morning.
Yeah.
But once we were there, it's like Latitude, I think, probably... It's a good festival to go for the duration of, which is what we did.
I particularly enjoyed your stage because you had this incredibly picturesque scene stretching out behind you and everywhere you looked around you, actually. It was quite incredible. It was like this really, really beautiful sort of forest, woodland kind of picture. Does that like help things for you as a performer at all?
I only knew the name of the stage and I couldn't remember from last year which one it was. And when I found out that it was that stage, I kind of like... my heart lifted a little.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like got more of a like a woodland party feel to it. Latitude, we played last year at kind of 4 PM, and then, you know, coming back to the same festival and playing it, kind of headlining a stage is kind of very, you know, it feels like you're making progress.
Yeah.
And the same thing's happening at Festival this year, so those are really nice, and especially because the tents have been full and like, you know, it's... those are the ones which are really good.
Of all the things you sort of browse as you were wandering around the site, what were your kind of, say, top three favourite Latitude moments?
Breeders I thought were pretty fun. I enjoyed the Cock and Bull Kid a lot. And I thought Interpol were really good, actually. Like, I saw them last year at Reading. At Latitude, they kind of did a very good job of kind of just going for it, I reckon.
So I'm very, very honoured to be currently sat next to Anita Blay, aka the Cock and Bull Kid, one of the UK's most exciting new pop singers. How are you doing, Anita?
Good, thanks.
I guess this is like your first festival season. so far, isn't it? Because you're obviously quite new. The lineup was pretty eclectic as well, and you make no qualms about being like an out and out pop artist. How do you think the crowd kind of responded to you at what was, you know, predominantly quite a downbeat kind of chilled festival?
No, they responded really well. I think taking into account that it was Sunday early evening, it was good to have people there who'd actually heard about me and then wanted to come and see it because they maybe hadn't seen me before.
Are people more up for it at festivals than they tend to be when they see you at a club show or whatever?
Yeah. But I mean, that makes sense because, you know, you're there for the weekend and you've actively chosen to go and watch this band.
You almost think of like festivals as having kind of like an inert kind of association with like rock and guitars and stuff. Have you found that like a different vibe kind of goes down well?
Well, like, to be honest, my proper experience of festivals only came like about a year ago. Anyway, that was the first time I've been to Glastonbury, and that was the first time I've been to festivals and stuff like that. So I only started going to festivals pretty much last year.
That was Jamie Hodgson speaking to Anita, the Cock and Ball Kid, as well as Jeremy Wormsley and Joe from Metronomy. And you can read more about the Latitude Festival on the old webo at guardian.co.uk/music. Quick bit from the blog now, and with customary even-handedness, we'll have one bit of praise and one criticism. Firstly, Shane07, after querying the folky legitimacy of Fleet Foxes, said of our main guest, Seth Lakeman, "Seth Lakeman, on the other hand, is fantastic. His live performance on the podcast has encouraged me to seek out his album. I hope we hear more from this guy." Rosie, do you hope to hear more? Well, I'm sure you do. But he's actually kind of getting a bit of buzz about him, kind of after an album, Seth Lakeman, which is quite interesting.
I'm heartened by that response. I find that really nice.
You were a bit anxious that people were going to dismiss him as a naff Aaron jumper wearer, weren't you?
He was like the ultimate Guardian pin-up. But apparently not.
No, that's good news. And secondly, however, we have the less upbeat message, and that's also from Marky, who wrote of last week's guest reviewer Andy Capper, the editor of Vice magazine, "I know that Vice's modus operandi is to make the readers feel inferior to and envious of its writers, but that doesn't really excuse his disdain of the listeners. Especially that's shown towards SV80, who is capable of more insight in a single post than his magazine can manage in an entire issue. In addition, to rail against music's commercialism and lack of political fire while overseeing a publication that seems to seek to justify the hedonistic, consequence-free and morally disengaged lifestyles of the dilettante class seems a little inconsistent."
Ooh, we got served.
Yeah, I think Andy Capp has been served. And fair point about SV80. We love you, SV. Rest assured, Marky, your point and those of others on the blog have been taken on board. Don't forget, though, you can post your thoughts on this week's show too. And it's all at guardian.co.uk/music. Quickly, some new Facebook friends. Denise McFadden, Denise Lees, Lover Anna, Veronica Fairhurst, Steph Peters, Christina McFadden, and I believe our first Lithuanian pal, Vilius Voldkavikius. Great news, eh, Rosie?
Yes.
Yes. We'll have some place to stay the next time we go on a stag to Vilnius. So that's great news.
You and I.
We always go away on stags together. Yeah. Rosie.
Yeah.
You've brought more than just energy to this show. It's been great talking with you. And great to be back.
Yeah.
Well, we'll both be back next week and we look forward to seeing you then. Ta-ta, bye.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.